Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, dude, have we been here before? Well, actually, Dougie, yes, we have. We have been on Dave's show before. Man, I don't remember. Hey, does smoking pot cause short-term memory loss? Yes, Dougie, it does.
Whoa.
So, Dougie, hey, dude, does smoking pot cause short-term memory loss?
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So Terry Fader was a busy, talented singing ventriloquist long before he won season 2 of America's Got Talent. Now he's a headliner at the Mirage in Las Vegas, securing one of the largest entertainment deals in Las Vegas history. And now you can see Terry Fader performing at the Genesee Theater on Friday, January 19th. And to hang out with us tonight is Terry Fader himself. Terry, what's up, my friend?
Oh, man, it's just great to be talking to you. It's great to be coming to the Chicago area. I love that area so very much. We have dear friends that live there. In fact, there are some people that live in Chicago that are coming to see us, and they lived with me in Corsicana, Texas, of all those years ago when I was a janitor. So they knew me back when I was a janitor.
Wow, that's cool.
Of course, they've come to see me in Vegas a couple of times, and the last couple of times I've been in Chicago, in the Chicago area, they've come to see me. So it's really one of my favorite areas, and I don't believe I've been there with my wife yet. So
nice.
She'll make sure and be with us, and so we're gonna have a lot of fun there.
I love that. And I want to tell the story. I met you and your wife. We were in Vegas, I think it was a couple years ago, Terry, and I was in town to interview Don Rickles for his 90th birthday, and after the interview, and I don't think I've shared this story. I told him, hey, we're sitting in row blah, blah, blah. You know, look for us out there. He goes, did you buy tickets? And I said, well, yeah, we bought tickets. I don't expect to get free tickets. He goes, we're friends. What are you doing buying tickets? Tony, get his tickets. Go refund his tickets. He's sitting in the back. You're sitting with Terry Fader tonight. And I thought to myself, okay, so this is what I said to myself, Terry Fader. I mean, and first of all, I saw you in 2015. I saw you in 2012. I'm like, That's he's bigger than Wayne Newton, man. It's Terry. We're gonna sit in the same box. We're gonna hang out with Terry Fader. And it was so cool meeting you and your wife and hanging out and watching a legend, an old time legend on stage.
What an amazing experience that was. And you know, I think to watch Don Rickles on stage, you know, when you watch him on television, you see insult, but when you watch him live, you really understood why he had the long career that he had, because he was a sweet human being.
Yes.
And that sweetness came across. His shtick was to insult you, but that sweetness came across. You could tell that he was genuinely a decent human, a good human being, a good man, because he made it very clear every single time he would insult somebody that he was just kidding, and then he would say something really warm afterwards to them, and it was just a delight to see that. And it's so weird though to be you know, I'm still the janitor from Corsicana, Texas. You know, I feel like I'm doing community theater here in Vegas, and I just went to see Paul Schaefer the other day here at the Caesar's Palace. He was doing kind of a club show.
Oh, that's cool.
And after Paul says, you know, Terry, I can't thank you enough for coming over here. It's like when Frank Sinatra used to come over and visit others. And I'm thinking, really?
I love that.
It doesn't feel that way. But
you are. People used to go to Vegas to see Wayne Newton. They come to Vegas to see Terry Fader. And that's the truth.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's cool stuff.
And my commitment is that, you know, that I just make sure that I'm always doing new stuff for people. And the thing is, when we come to your area, the show is totally different than what you see in Vegas. So if you come to Vegas,
cool.
you can come and see me there, and then you can also come and see me after and come see me in Vegas, and you will not, it's not like, oh, I've seen him already, you know, so you don't have to worry. We're going to make sure and do different shows. So.
That's great. No, that's great. And I got to say, I saw you a couple times in Vegas, and it's an amazing show, and you're so gifted as a ventriloquist, but add in singer, comedian, impressionist, you're a quadruple threat, man. I mean, and you have this orchestra. I mean, this is a big-time Vegas show, and that's what I really love about your shows. There's nothing else like it.
Yeah, it's a ball. I tell you, I have so much fun doing it, and I just kind of let the audience in on the fun. I feel like if I'm having fun, the audience is going to be having fun.
Sure.
You know, sometimes things happen and puppets get lost and don't make it to the show. It doesn't matter to me because people didn't come there just to see puppets. They came there to have a good time. And as long as I'm making sure they have a good time, then I did my job.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? And I don't want to sound older than I am because I think we're about the same age, but it reminds me of what I know about the vaudeville shows back in the day, or the earliest variety shows on television, like in the late 1940s and the early 1950s, where you got just a little bit of everything when you went to a show, right?
You're absolutely right. And the funny thing is, I grew up idolizing vaudeville, and a lot of the listeners right now listening to us won't even know what vaudeville is. Look it up. It's worth it. And I grew up just constantly reading books and watching old movies and listening to old records about vaudeville, and I was so fascinated by the era and the whole idea of these entertainers who did everything, you know, and you don't see that much anymore. You know, back in the day, you'd see Sammy Davis Jr. and he told jokes, he sang, he danced, he did, you know, literally everything you could do. And that's what I kind of grew up with, that mentality of, hey, if I can do it, I'm going to make sure I do it on stage. If I have the talent to do it, I'm going to do it on stage. So
that's cool. What interested you in all this, like specifically ventriloquism? Like was it all the way back in grade school and elementary school?
Yes, it went all the way back to when I was a kid. You know, that was just kind of my thing. I just love performing. I love to entertain. I knew that I wanted to be an entertainer for my life, and that I wanted that to be my my career. So you know, from the time I was about 2 years old, I've been singing and on stage and doing things. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 10, I found a book on how to do ventriloquism, and it looked fascinating. I'd seen ventriloquists before. They came to my church, and I was not impressed, even as a child, like 5 years old. I'm thinking they're not very good. You know, I could see their lips moving.
Yeah,
and having it, I couldn't understand what the puppet was saying. So you know, even as a child, I kind of knew, but I knew what ventriloquism was. And then of course, once I picked it up, I started voraciously watching anything and everything I could. Anytime I saw a ventriloquist was going to be on television, I would scour the TV guide in case Jay Johnson or Willie Tyler and Lester or Edgar Bergen or Jimmy Nelson, any one of those, or Paul Winchell was going to be on television, and I would just watch. And then of course Turner Classic Movies would do on Edgar Bergen's birthday, when Turner Classic Movies came along in the late 80s, maybe it was early 90s, but they would do, on Edgar Bergen's birthday, they would play tons of shorts, and that was in the day of the VCR, and I would record them and watch them over and over and over.
That's
and
cool.
So, you know, that's just how I did it, but I thought it sounded interesting and thought it sounded fun, and there wasn't anybody else. I wanted to be unique, and there were a lot of other magicians. I tried magic. There were a lot of other singers. There were people in bands, but there was no ventriloquists in our school. So, you know, I was really kind of trying to do it so I could do stuff in the school talent show and not do something somebody else was doing.
You know, we have at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, I'm on the board for this museum, we have the original Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snerd on display. You're going to have to come see that while you're in town if you're here for a few days.
if I have any time at all, I'm coming, because that would be amazing to see. And you know, we were janitors and we were house restoration. My parents had a house restoration janitorial business.
Yeah.
So we would spend hours and hours and hours cleaning, and there were times when we had to clean and restore houses and paint and things all night long. And there was a station in Dallas that would play old-time radio
all night long,
and so I would stick the old time radio, and they would play Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy and Lyman Abner and, you know, and Fibber McGee and Molly and Jack Benny. They would play all this stuff all night long, and I'm just listening and learning how to create and write and do all this while I'm painting, because my job, my goal was not to continue in the family business, which was janitorial. My goal was to just break out into the entertainment industry.
And you were studying it obviously pretty well. Now, what about the impersonations? Because how did that piece of it begin? Because that doesn't always, you know, go together. Where do the impersonations come from?
You know, it just, I could do it. I didn't even know that I was doing anything unusual. I thought everybody could do it because it came so easily for me.
Wow.
So, like, when I was a teenager and I would I'd be asked to sing at church, and we had these little karaoke cassettes that we would get of Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith and, whoever, David Meese, were the big, the people, the Imperials. And I would learn the song identical and sing it exactly like the Christian, contemporary Christian artists were.
Wow.
And then, of course, when I started listening to Michael Jackson, I would sing the song exactly like Michael Jackson. And it just came so naturally and easily for me. Honestly, I didn't even realize that I had a special talent to do something like that until I was maybe 28 or 29. And somebody had to tell me that I was the only person that they knew that could do it. I honestly thought that it was just something everybody could do because it was like, wow. And then, of course, it was about 38 when I put the two together. I mean, I was always doing impressions of ventriloquism, but I was never focusing on it. And then when I was 38, I saw an impressionist in Vegas, and I thought, I can do that. And his name was Danny Gans. He was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, I can do that, but, there's already a Danny Gans. I don't want to be a Danny Gans copycat, so I'll just be a ventriloquist who does it, not realizing that people were going to go crazy for it. I really didn't. I did not think people were going to go nuts for it. I just figured, it's just another thing. And when I started actually doing it, and I would I pulled out my puppet the first time and I had my puppet sing at last. I watched the crowd's jaws drop.
That's awesome.
And I'm sitting there and I'm on stage and I'm thinking, hey, I might be onto something here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I know, I don't know, maybe it was a year ago, 2 years ago, you kind of launched a somewhat non-political at the time, Donald Trump.
Yeah, and it's still non-political, and I don't do politics in my show because
I like that.
When you do politics, half of your audience is not going to get what you're doing.
Are they going to be ticked?
I have fun with the bigness of Trump's character, and the fact is, and here's what I tell people, and they're like, well, if you did a Donald Trump, how come you never did an Obama or a George Bush or a Hillary Clinton? And I'm like, and here's my answer, because the only way you and I and everyone else knows about Obama or Hillary Clinton or George W. Bush is through the fact that they were politicians. They are politics.
Yeah.
Donald Trump transcends politics because politics is only one thing. He's a TV talk show host. He's a billionaire. He's a mogul. He's a casino owner. We've known about him since I was a kid. I mean, Donald Trump has just been in my vernacular since I was 14 or 12, maybe even earlier. So we know of him in so many more ways. So I don't make fun of him. So if you're a Trump supporter, you're not going to hate it. I have fun with him. I have, and here's the thing. Trump has actually seen the routine and thinks it's funny. And that's very important to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to make anyone mad. I don't want anyone to walk away saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe, he's a blankety blank. I can't believe he did this. I just want to have fun. And Trump's a big character. He's every time you can't turn on the news without seeing him. So I don't go into policy. I don't go into any kind of political things. I just have fun.
So you're out there performing and owning your craft, and you decided to participate in America's Got Talent, a fairly new show at that time. It was season two. And I read this about this in several articles. Was it getting on Letterman a motivation? Because I mean, you were a big Letterman fan at the time, weren't you?
Oh, getting on Letterman was the motivation for everything. When I was in college in like 1983, I had this little black and white TV, and I was at a Christian college, and we weren't allowed to have television. Mm-hmm. So I hid it up in the rafters of my dorm room. So I would climb up on these bunk beds, and I would stick it up there. And I'm telling you, they searched my room many times trying to find, because they knew I had a TV, and they couldn't find it. And then late at night, when everybody was asleep, I would crawl up there. I would get it out of the roof, out of the ceiling.
That's awesome.
And I would watch David Letterman, and I would say, one day I'm going to be on Letterman. And I'm telling you, I sent him so many videos and trying to get on, never got anything. And then it was kind of interesting because he invited me I first got invited by Jay Leno, and I said, have I been invited by Letterman? And they said, actually you have, but you can only choose one. And I said, I choose Letterman. And so I never got invited to Leno again because of that.
Yeah.
So they said, you're going to have to make your choice. And I said, no, it's been my dream.
That sucks.
I was dreaming of being on Letterman before Leno was, when Carson was on.
Right,
so,
of course. course.
You know, that was my goal. And then and then the first time I was supposed to be on, I got gravely ill and was ended up in the hospital.
You couldn't do it.
And
yeah.
had to cancel. Yeah. No. And then he called me, like, his people called me like 5 times, and I had to say no because I was so busy. And then finally I was like, oh my gosh, finally. And he even said that when he introduced me. He goes, we'll tell you how popular this guy is. We've been trying to get him. He's turned us down like 5 times, and he's finally here. And wow. I just performed with, I mean, I didn't perform. I went and saw Paul Schaefer perform, and he talked about the fact that that I did many performances on the Letterman show.
That's
and
cool.
that I was always, it was always a big hit with his audiences and with David himself.
So. I bet. And now look at things. You're marketing, I think, your 10th year at the Mirage this year in 2018 here?
It's my ninth year, 10th year in Vegas. I started for a year. But this will be my ninth, you know, I'm coming up 9 years, my ninth anniversary in March.
And I love that you don't forget where it all got started. You still make the rounds on America's Got Talent to encourage others to follow that dream, too. And I really love seeing you on there as well.
Yes, you know, and that's the thing is, it doesn't matter, you know, I feel like that I've reached a level of success, and even if I go even beyond that, I will never be unappreciative of what that show did for me, never, you know, so if they call me, I'm going to do anything and everything I can to be on the show and to support it. You know, they even call me sometimes and say, hey, would you do interviews, you know, we're doing auditions, and I'm like, I'm in, let's do it.
Oh, that's awesome, that's awesome. Now, I know this is
supporting them.
This is probably a question, Terry, that it's like asking who your favorite child is, but do you deep down have a favorite character that you do?
You know, it's so funny that you say that, and people say that to me, and maybe it's that, you know, I am definitely an artist, but I don't think I'm that much of an artist, because the fact is they're puppets. They don't have feelings. so they could not care less who I choose.
Yeah.
And I definitely have favorites. Winston the Impersonating Turtle, hands down my favorite, because he, let's be honest, the turtle who sings like Roy Orbison won America's Got Talent. I don't know if I would have won the show if the turtle had not sung like Roy Orbison. My sentimental favorite is Walter T. Airedale, my cowboy puppet. He'll definitely be there with me in that area.
That's
when I
awesome.
Come there. And because he's my very first professional puppet, so sentimentally he's my favorite. But I gotta say, I got kind of almost a tie now. My two favorites to perform might be Maynard Tompkins, the Elvis impersonator, and the great thing about him is he's the only Elvis impersonator in the world who does not know any Elvis songs. And I thought that was a hilarious idea when I came up with it. And I have so much fun with him. But the very close second, coming up to even, is Dougie. And
yep,
Dougie
yep.
is that stoner character yep. that, you know, and he's really kind of based on people that we all knew. You know, we all knew this guy,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, that guy in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And my vision of Dougie was, you know, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be funny if, not funny, but, you know, all these guys are like successful businessmen, and they're very few of them are like Spicoli, you know, they're not still. And so I thought, what if they never change? What if they're the same guy when they're 40
sure.
that they were in high school, you know, that dude, yeah, right, you know, and so that's who Dougie is, and he is so much fun to perform, and so I have a lot of fun, but, you know, I'm not one of those that you can call them dummies, they don't have feelings, I don't care, I don't get my
okay.
I don't get my panties in a bunch over,
gotcha.
over all that stuff.
Very cool. Well, I gotta tell you what, you gotta see Terry Fader if you haven't. He's gonna be at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan Friday, January 19th. For tickets, you can visit GeneseeTheater.com. That's GeneseeE Theater with an RE at the end.com. And for more on Terry, and if you're out in Vegas, completely different show. You can see him at the Mirage, and you can find out more at TerryFader.com. And Terry, it is a thrill to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing you later this week.
I am so excited. I'm telling you, I'm counting down the days. It's just going to be a ball.
And if you want to see Charlie McCarthy, let me know. Have your folks call me, and we'll arrange something.
I definitely do, and I'm going to have my people call you, because I really would love to do that. I'm not kidding you.
Fabulous. So. Fabulous. Thanks, Terry. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. News is next on 720 WGN.